Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. I am your host, Dan Reichert, and sitting across the table from me is your other host, Bianca Reichert,
my
wife.
That's me, yes. Hello, Dan.
How are you doing, honey?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We just watched a dumbass show.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. So, it was special, though.
I enjoyed it. It is in line with, I think, what we were looking for when we started Panning the Stream. Mm-hmm. This is Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction. Mm-hmm. This is a show, I do not know the full run of it. I know that we started with Josh Brolin. He has a brother, Tom, Sam, something Brolin. He did the first season, but it looks like we have several subsequent seasons.
Wait, Josh Brolin's brother?
I think so. His name was like Tom Brolin or something.
Huh, the lesser Brolin.
I'm assuming. I don't know how many Brolins there are. Hmm. Like, I could have done some research, but I did not.
Yeah, that's okay. That's how we roll.
The important thing is that Jonathan Frakes from Star Trek The Next Generation, mm-hmm. which I'm not an expert of Star Trek of any sort, but I was for a good chunk of my life called Commander Riker by various people that happened to be into Star Trek, and I never knew what the hell they were talking about. But then I watched like 10 episodes of Next Generation, and I kind of know who that guy is now.
Remember when my dad used to call you Strikert?
I do. I don't know why he called me that.
He gets names wrong all the time.
Is he a big Mortal Kombat 3 guy with Strikers?
No,
dude?
He just gets names wrong, and yeah. Then he sticks with it.
Okay.
He still just calls you Riker. He doesn't realize there's a T there, even though it's my last name.
It's your name,
too now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that said, Strikert wouldn't be that bad of a last
name.
That'd be
awesome.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yes, this is Jonathan Frakes, Commander Riker, who is hosting this show, and he's got a real sassy way about him in this show. There's a lot of like, oh, maybe was this a real thing that happened, or did this exist only in the minds of our fun writers?
My favorite part is at the intro to every episode, well, we've only watched two episodes, but I assume this is consistent throughout the show. He presents some kind of like visual illusion, optical illusion.
Yeah.
And like presents that as like a demonstration of what the show, and this show like super isn't like reality or fiction. It's like its definition of reality is so, like these stories that they're calling true are so obviously not based in what actually happened.
Right. I was instantly thrown off in the first time we saw the reveal, and he's like, oh yes, something kind of like this happened.
Yeah.
He's like, well, that's not fact. Do
no.
you know what the word fact means?
Or like, if it is true, they're clearly like omitting some like critical detail or something.
Yeah, or adding something sensationalistic.
All right, let's go through these.
Well, the first one, at the beginning of the first episode here, we watched episode 1 and 2 of season 2, which is the debut of Jonathan Frakes. He does the like classic old lady, young lady thing. Like, oh, is this an old lady
that
or young
picture,
lady?
Yeah.
Or is the difference between fact and fiction as indiscernible as the difference between young and old?
I would
argue that doesn't make sense.
That's the most obvious
difference.
Yes,
that lady's old. That yeah. lady's young. Jesus. So yes, this entire show is bullshit.
Yeah.
But let's run down these stories. We did not tell each other whether we were classifying these things as fact
right.
or fiction.
So we're going to find out now.
Yeah. So if you didn't watch the show, basically each episode gives you 5 fucking mini stories.
Ugh.
And then at the end of it says like, okay, was this thing kind of real or
yeah.
complete bullshit?
Yeah.
So basically like we kind of kept score here. So at a maximum score of 10, we'll
see
how many we get.
Can I just make a suggestion to this
yes.
show?
Yes. This currently running show. If you're listening, Mr. Show.
This is what they should have done. They should have done like 3 stories, okay? One of them is real. Reveal the real one at the end, and then, or you know, not the end of the show, like the middle of the show, and then explain what happened. Go deeper into the story. Because
yes.
they just, he's just like, oh yeah, this one's real, moves right on to the next one, like not giving us any other background information than what we saw.
I would be more satisfied if he said this one's real, but every time he's like, yeah, I mean, you could assume something like this might have happened at some point
this
somewhere.
This is based on a similar event.
Yeah. It's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
So, out of the 10 bullshit stories, we are going to start here with the plane.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically, we're going to run through these pretty quick because
yeah.
these are not deep stories.
No.
At all right. Michael's a pilot. Michael's dad is dead. He
his
lands at a
dad
diner.
Dad is a pilot as well.
Yes, his dad who gave him these like pilot wings as a kid,
which
and he
pilot
lost
wings
them.
Are apparently little pins.
Little pins,
yeah.
not a Super Nintendo
yeah,
or
yeah.
64 game. Yes, and so yeah, these little pins. He lost them when he was a kid. Whatever. Dad's dead. Michael lands at a diner, some like weird diner next to an airstrip and nothing else. I don't know. I've never flown planes.
Oh, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
The scene where they flash back and show the dad's death and the mom is weeping It's like the most horribly ADR'd weeping, and it sounds like just a guy weeping over the footage of the mom weeping.
They already had Jonathan Frakes at a microphone. They forgot to ask the lady to do it.
Yeah, that's really what it sounded like. It was really, really, that was beyond reality.
That was fiction.
That was, yeah.
So the guy lands at a diner, and the audience sees that oil is leaking from his plane. Michael does not see that. Mm-hmm. So he goes in there to reminisce about life and his father and everything.
And yeah, Roger, the coffee shop owner, clearly has a hard-on for Michael's dead dad.
Yes.
He's like, Michael, I loved your dad so much, Michael. And just nonstop talking about his fucking dad. It keeps a picture of his dad up at the diner.
Yeah, frame picture right there that Michael sits next to and just stares forlornly at.
Yeah.
And so while he's reminiscing about his dead father, his plane just starts leaving.
Someone's stealing the plane.
Yeah, that's the assumption, someone's stealing this thing. So it's flying around doing stupid shit for a while. It crashes. It just flies straight down. And they go and they look. There's no body in there at all. And then Michael finds the wings, mm-hmm. the little wings. They're mm-hmm. there on the dash.
Yeah. So the story here that they're trying to argue is that the spirit of his father took the wheel. Jesus took the wheel and saved him from the leaking oil. Because if Michael would have gone back in the plane, he probably would have crashed because of the leaking oil or whatever. I don't know how planes work, but apparently that would happen.
Which at first I thought, like, what a dickhead daddy. Just like took his son's plane for a joyride and crashed it. And then I was like, oh, right. He would have died because of the oil thing. So Roger. The diner guy goes, there's no one in there. Yeah. And then Michael's like, yes, there was. And then it was the end. Like, hey, is this bullshit or not? Which I wrote in all caps, that's fiction. Because that sounded like a whole load of bullshit.
Yeah, I said that I believe this is fake. This was a flight of fancy.
Yes. but it turns out, no, something like that maybe happened. You could imagine.
Yeah,
so.
A similar event did take place. Yes. So I was wrong. And you were wrong.
Accompanied by a giant fact font on the screen. All right, sure.
Fact.
So we're at 0-0 right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
How would you call the spirit of a father take control of a plane fact? But whatever. Well, as soon as he said that, I knew, like, all right, none of these stories are going to fucking actually be true.
Me too, yeah. They're all bullshit.
Yeah.
Although I guess they put up the argument that, like, oh, maybe he left it on autopilot and didn't totally, like, turn the plane off
but
or something.
But would autopilot, like, bring a plane from, like, being totally still in park, I don't know what they call it, to flying around and then...
No. I don't know shit about planes, but there's no fucking way it's going to go up and start doing loop-de-loops and shit. And
yeah.
They were one step shy of, like, doing skywriting of, like, I love you, son. Like,
right.
Yes. So apparently that's fact. I guess we're dumb.
If that's true. It really happened.
Yeah. We both said it was fiction. So 0-0. Next up, we've got The Gun, mm-hmm. who we meet Tom North and his wife. Nameless wife. They look like dollar store Frances McDormand and Warren Zevon. And Tom has a lockbox with a gun in it.
Yeah.
And he's about to go out on business.
Apparently, it's an old gun that's been with his dad, and the gun only shoots bad people,
says that because that's how guns work and have always worked, even old guns.
Yeah, and so Tom is going out on a business trip, and apparently the neighborhood that was once safe is now becoming dangerous, and there's been a string of home invasions in the area surrounding their house. So they're, you know, understandably on edge.
Yeah.
Tom's about to go away on business. His wife's going to be alone in the house.
Yeah.
So he gives her this gun.
They go to the shooting range and everything. He makes sure she knows how to use it and everything, and he takes off. Or so we think, because mm-hmm. she has a nightmare that somebody's coming into the house, and she goes to shoot the guy, but then she can't, and she wakes up, and he's still there. Then he actually leaves, and so now it's for real this time.
Yeah.
So it's basically the exact same thing again. She wakes up in the middle of the night, noises and stuff are going on. Tom's not there. So she grabs the gun, and it's their college-age son who, like, came back unexpectedly.
Yeah, he has a gun, approaches the stairway, and then sees a figure coming down the stairs, so she tries to shoot at him.
Yes.
It becomes immediately apparent that it's her son.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what her son looks like, but I knew that was her son. And I knew it for 5 minutes before she stopped firing at him.
Exactly. He's got a backpack. And he's like, oh, mom, it's me. Don't shoot, mom. It's me.
Dan,
and
am
then
I
it's
wrong?
Like so she, long.
Right. Like 2 minutes after he said that, she's still firing at him. It was something ridiculous like that.
Which, important to note, it's not actually firing bullets because she has a revolver that is loaded, but she, like, the chamber is going around, but it's not firing.
Yeah.
Something's wrong. But she is just pulling the trigger a billion times at her son, who's like, hey, mom. Quit doing that. I'm your son.
Yeah, the son's just like standing there like, mom, what are you doing?
And
he just keeps firing. I don't know why he doesn't run away, but whatever.
Yeah. And so she drops the gun for some reason after trying to fire it a million times. It bounces down the stairs and just starts firing like crazy. And it winds up shooting an intruder who happened to be coming into the house at the exact same time as the son.
Yeah, or he was, like, in the house already, who knows. But, how convenient that there's a shooter there, so.
I guessed fact on this one just because I assume that some of them have to be real.
Right.
And this one, while sounding entirely illogical and improbable, mm-hmm. there wasn't anything remotely mystical about it.
Dan, oh my god, I was going to say the exact same thing. That was my way of grading these two. I just figured if there was anything mystical, then I was just going to say it's false. This, obviously, like, the chances of this happening are very slim, but there was no, like, mystical force at work here. It seems like, oh, I guess it could have happened.
I guess so. It's so illogical, but again, there's nothing, like, yeah, supernatural about this. Yeah. So we were both right there. So we both said fact, yep. And it was fact. Mm-hmm. So we are at one to one right now. Mm-hmm. Next up, we've got the portrait, who I immediately recognize the painter guy here, William, as Bill Buchanan, leader of CTU in some of the later seasons of 24, which is funny because he's like this, you know, real by-the-books military guy in 24. And here he's like this, you know, very like mustachioed, like kind of curly-haired painter guy.
At least he hasn't been typecast.
Right, yeah. Good for Bill Buchanan. So it starts out, he's painting this old lady, and we find out that he paints people, and then they die. And so he says, like, oh, yeah, the painting will be ready for delivery on Wednesday, which means, oh, come pick it up on Wednesday, and they wind up dying that day.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it's, I gather that people kind of know what they're in for. If they ask him to paint their portrait, they know, like, I'm going to die soon.
Yeah, it seems like he had a reputation.
Right. So then this young woman comes to his door named Michelle, who begs him to do her portrait, and he's hesitant because he's very particular, and she obviously looks very young. There doesn't appear to be anything wrong with her physically. She doesn't appear to be sick.
Right. So, some of these guys are, like, coughing up lungs, like, while they're sitting there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, she's 23, and her boyfriend just left her. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could, if he has a reputation, it's like, okay, that's the way you can kind of die or whatever is what's implied here. So, sure enough, she dies. The cops show up at Bill Buchanan's door, and they like, question him and stuff, but I can't remember if they actually say they're going to arrest him or anything.
Yeah, I was really, this story made no sense, because why would she be dying under mysterious circumstances? It's not like William Corzine, the artist, actually murdered them. Like, that's not what they're, you know, suggesting. They're just suggesting there's this connection between the paintings and the person dying.
Yeah, in no world, even if this was, like, actual footage of what happened, like, he didn't do anything illegal.
Right.
Like, he painted people and they happened to die.
Yeah, so I assume this girl killed herself, right? I mean, I who's to say it's a fake story, but
I mean, yeah, like, the implication is that she wanted to die, at least. Yeah. So it was, like, suicide by portrait. And sure enough, we find out. Well, what did you say? I said fiction.
Oh, I said this is fake.
Because this sounded like complete bullshit. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fact. Or so Jonathan Frakes says. Yeah. So we're still at 1-1 here. Three stories in.
That was really dumb. Here's my assumption. There's probably a portrait artist at one time who painted someone and they died a week or two afterward. Yeah. And that's what this is all based on.
Yeah, like urban legends or old wives' tales. Like, oh, I heard old Bill got his painting done and then he died 3 days later. And then it just, like, you know, a game of telephone gets passed around and it's bullshit.
Ugh.
It's, all right, so we've got, so next up we've got the pass, which one of my greatest joys in all 10 of these stories is surprise supermarket sweep host showing up at the beginning, which I did not know he was an actor at all. Uh-huh. I have only seen that guy in a billion episodes of Supermarket Sweep as, like, the kindly, I guess I just assumed he was a grocery store owner who, like, allowed cameras into his store and hosted a show. But no, he's an actor, it turns out. And
just like your grandpa.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly like him. So he shows up. He is a doctor and his son is in the hospital
for unknown reasons
and then also sharing the hospital room, which you'd think if your dad was the doctor at the hospital you could kind of get your own room or something, but no, he has to sit next to Mark McGrath Jr. here, who's this other kid in the hospital room. And so the other kid with the earrings and the bleached hair steals the all-access hospital pass from the doctor's coat while he's visiting his son.
And this kid, this dude's frosted tips are just unreal.
They are extremely of their time.
Yeah, Jeff Gerstmann levels of wild frosted tips.
Oh, yeah, the glory days of Jeff's tips. Yes. So kid decides, hey, let's go to the morgue. That's the thing kids like to do.
And yeah, just because these fucking kids in hospital gowns have an all-access pass, employees of the hospital aren't going to stop them and question them?
Yeah, it's just completely unstaffed. Yeah. There's no security anywhere. Yeah. Like, even in, like, what? This is, like, the early 2000s. This isn't, like,
some kids wandering around to the morgue. Even if he has a pass, I'm going to be like, dude, get the fuck out of here.
But no, they get straight in there. No problem at all.
The first place they go to is the morgue.
And they instantly start trying to, like, open up the, like, corpse slot or whatever you call those things.
Is this what boys do? They want to see dead bodies?
No, you try to find porn in the woods.
Yeah,
that's what you do when you're a young boy of that age.
Honestly, honestly, like, if you're wandering around the morgue, like, the chances of you finding some really gnarly shit. What if someone, like, fucking blows their face off with a shotgun? You open up the bag to see that shit?
I guess.
That would scar you.
I guess there are probably kids that were up for, like, doing dangerous, scary things or whatever. Like, you hear about kids breaking into buildings and things like that, you know?
Yeah, but dead bodies, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a step beyond.
Anyway, this kid is, like, super fucking into looking at these bodies.
Yeah, he opens up the corpse slot thing, just, like, straight up starts unzipping a bag right away. And then he unzips the bag, and then the doctor's son looks in there, and oh my god, it's just him in there. Mm-hmm. But then we find out it was like his identical twin brother.
Right.
Yeah. So I said fiction for this one.
I said this is real.
Okay, so you got this right, didn't you?
No, I got this wrong. It was fiction.
Oh wait, the past was fiction. That's right. Okay, so I got it right. So it's two to one me now. Right. Okay.
Yeah, I just figured... Again, it seems like something so unlikely, but it could happen. I mean, I still, at the end, didn't know why those two kids, Eddie and the Frosted Tip guy, were in the hospital to begin with.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a chance, like, a twin brother could be in a hospital, and then his twin gets, like, in an accident and dies. But, I mean, also then the likelihood of him finding the body in the morgue would be slim. I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, it was just, like, it didn't have the mystical flavor, so I figured, well, maybe it's somewhat real, but...
And, like, not knowing why they're in the hospital and stuff, I feel like the show, in trying to squeeze 5 stories into every episode, mm-hmm. it's like, we need to just give you the... only what you need to know here. We are not giving you backstory.
And you know what, Dan? You know what I'm realizing? Maybe, like, the ones that are really mystical, that are true, are just, like, using the mystical stuff as a replacement for some, like, critical detail that they're omitting to make it seem more unbelievable. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of playing fast and loose with what happened here.
Yeah, like, oh, we won't tell them this, but we'll just leave it up to them our suggestions that, ugh.
Yeah, it would be more ambiguous and fun for the viewer if we left out this thing or included this thing.
Right.
So next up, we've got the caller, which this is probably the most insufferable character in all 10 stories. Clive Kincaid, who is a late night radio talk show host. They just make him the most insufferable dude in the world. He's just shitting on all of his callers. Like, there's no actual conversation. He's basically just like, hello, you're talking to late night Clive Kincaid.
Hi,
fuck
Clive,
you, you're stupid.
All right.
No, shut up. Get out of here. You're gone. Hey, nice to see you. Nice
Hi,
to meet you.
Clive,
good to see you. No, get the fuck out of here. See ya. Don't call again. Bye. So it's that for like the entire first half of the story. And then there's this fortune cookie thing that doesn't go anywhere, where he, like, eats a couple of them, and then he's like, they're all the same.
Yeah, but also, what office or studio, I guess, has a bowl of fortune cookies? Loose fortune cookies.
Yeah, it was
I've never
weird.
Seen that. I mean, like, a bowl of homeless mints, right?
Yes.
A bowl of...
Which you're the only person I've ever heard call them homeless mints.
Yeah, the little peppermint mints.
They're just peppermints.
The red and white swirls. They're homeless peppermints.
Or just mints. You could even just say mints.
Or, like, you know, maybe dum-dums, right? You see bowls of dum-dums. I've never seen a bowl of loose fortune cookies.
Or an Andy's mints, but those aren't loose. Those have the wrapper on them.
Yeah.
So these are loose. Maybe that's to show that, like, oh, maybe he's losing his mind because he said, oh, they're all the same. And the lady in the control room is like, no, they're not.
Well, my fake flags were flying as soon as I saw that bowl of fortune cookies. I mean, frankly, who that alone is enough proof that this isn't real. But proceed.
So this lady keeps calling in and asking about, or it sounds like a lady at first. I wrote down lady, but
it's
turns out it's
a
not.
Young boy.
Yeah. It's a young boy. Saying like, oh, do you remember your son Robbie? Your son Robbie? And she keeps calling and calling and calling. He keeps trying to hang up. And finally he's like, all right, fine. I was passing through Fort Wayne, Indiana. I had a one-night stand. There was a kid. And he said he tried to go visit him once, but he saw the kid like throwing a tennis ball against the wall and he didn't want to go up and talk to him or something. And then he wound up dying. The kid wound up dying like the summer prior. And then the caller's like, well, it was me. I'm Robbie. And then all of a sudden, like, Clive sees a baseball glove on the audio board, and then a tennis ball bounces in out of nowhere, and no one else can see it, and it seems like he's losing his mind. And then he was never on the radio ever again, but he got his highest ratings of all time that night. Mm. I said this was fact.
I said this was fake.
It was fiction. So you got it right. So we are tied at 2 right now.
Yeah, so I got 2 out of 5 correct. You got 2 of 5 correct.
Okay, so going into episode 2, we are tied at 2, which, God, it's fucking impossible to guess these things.
Let me just say, there's one thing that's factual, undeniably factual, and that is Jonathan Frakes' just voluptuous chest hair.
He really is not shy about it.
No.
Yeah, hey, good on him.
It starts quite high, too.
I like to think that there is some producer or something that's like, hey, Jonathan, can you get that one more button? He's like, no.
You know, my brother Tom, whose name starts with a T, his chest hair grows in a T. It grows between his nipples and then down the middle of his stomach. So it looks like he's like a superhero.
Is that by design? Did he plan on this?
No, that's why it's impressive. It's totally natural.
Wow, good job,
yeah.
Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tom, creator of the Panning the Stream theme song.
That is true. It's you heard it at guy. The beginning of this. So, you'll hear it again at the end. So episode two, we've got Fire Station 32 is the first one that kicks off, which I think is the only one that doesn't have a "the" in the title. But anyway, this little kid, it's like his 10th birthday. He's been hanging around the fire station since he was like 6. He befriends this guy, Fireman
little
Parks.
Little Stevie, yeah.
Yeah,
Mr.
little
Parks.
Stevie. And he's riding his bike home from the fire station one day. He sees that a house is on fire, runs back, tells the guys, oh, go down to 33, whatever street, like this house is on fire. And he gets to ride in the truck. He just kind of like pops up in the truck, like, oh, okay, let's go. And the fireman's like, sure, let's go ahead and go do this. They get there. The fireman has Stevie like throw a switch to turn the hose or something on. And basically, like, they do their fireman job. They save everyone or whatever. And
they do the fireman job.
They do the fireman thing. You know, they get the fire out of there. And then old Stevie there is sitting on the front of the fire truck. Fireman Parks runs up to be like, hey, buddy, you're a real fireman now. Puts the little helmet on him and everything. And then he, like, turns around and there's his fireman buddy is there. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, what are you talking about? That kid died. And
yeah, he was the only casualty, supposedly.
Yeah, like smoke inhalation from, like, running in there. So, like, and then he does the thing where he turns around to where the kid was sitting and there's no kid there.
Right.
So that seemed, like, if not mystical, it's definitely doing the, like, oh, was the guy crazy? Was he hallucinating this thing? Or was he under duress? And because, so I said fiction.
I said I could see this being very loosely based on a true story. So I said true.
Okay. Yeah. So you are up. So yep. 2 me, 3 you. I got that one wrong. We will go into number 6 here, which is The Computer, which has my favorite pre-segment because it's Jonathan Frakes and whatever year the show was made. I think 01, 2000, around that.
Something like
that. And he talks about how we're in the age of communication because we have post-it notes
that
we can
we
put
leave
on
in
the fridge.
Fridge.
We've got pager numbers we can give people. We're always in contact.
Now, the pager, could you text through a pager or was that just like to tell someone, hey, give me a call?
Maybe at some point there were... I never had a pager. I was too young.
I think Grillman had a pager. My dad had a pager.
My understanding is that the primary function was to, like, if I paged you, you would see my number on your pager and you would call me back. Like, you'd get to a payphone or something.
So you would call a pager? Like, with a phone?
Yeah, like, I think I would page you by calling your pager number.
And then you would see...
And then you would basically have, like, a caller ID saying, like, hey, Dan's calling.
So it's just a notification that this person is trying to reach you.
Exactly. Okay. So if you're... Yeah, so, I mean, like, it served a purpose in the days before texting and smartphones and everything.
Simpler time.
Yes. I'll have to show you the clip sometime when Stone Cold Steve Austin texts The Rock 316 while The Rock is standing in the ring, and The Rock looks at it, and his eyes bug out real big, and he turns around right into a goddamn Stone Cold Stunner.
Wait a minute now. You said he paged The Rock 316?
Yeah, I don't know if Steve Austin in kayfabe here, like, hacked pagers or something, or I don't know if you were able to type in what you wanted it to display, because it definitely said 316, and The Rock knew a stunner was coming.
Now, here's the dream scenario, Dan. Era of pagers, pre-cell phone,
right?
AIM is rocking. Everyone's rocking the AIM with their screen names and their AOL profiles.
Yeah, your way messages.
Video games are where they are now, right?
Right.
And Amazon exists, so we could buy everything super easily.
Yes. Things are great.
Seamless. Everything but social media. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, if we could just nuke all social media and then just have all the stuff that, like, makes it handy to, like, make sure that we know that the other person isn't dead if we're out of the house.
Yeah, how about that?
That'd be real nice.
That would be nice.
That'd be great.
I don't know.
So, now that we know about the age of communication, we learn about the computer, which is the babysitter, which that intro didn't really have anything to do with the story outside of the fact that a computer was involved.
Oh, yeah. The computer, you could have replaced the computer with anything in this scenario.
Yeah, it could have been a wallet. Well, we get the wallet later.
Yeah, it's not like they were using the computer to communicate.
No, not at all. So this babysitter is babysitting a kid, and she brings her computer because when the kid goes to bed, she's going to, like, do shit for her term paper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this family goes out to this weird, like, cul-de-sac party with valets.
Yeah. Which, it's just like a single-story house. Why does it have valets?
Yeah, it looks like a very modest suburban house with, like, little tiny houses, like, next to it and everything, but there's fucking valets and candles and shit. So they are about to pull into this house party, but then they look in the back seat of their car, and they see that the babysitter's computer case is back there with her computer.
Right.
So they're like, oh, shit, we got to go back there.
Well, they call her first, and Sarah doesn't pick up.
Right. So they're like, fuck, we got to go home.
Yeah.
They go home. They see the window is broken.
House is ransacked.
Yeah. So wife stays in the car to call the police. Dude, I really recognize this dude from something. I don't know what it is. The dad is definitely from something I've seen. I don't know what, though. But he goes in, and he finds Sarah, the babysitter, tied up to a chair. baby's totally safe. The robber's still in the house. They were just basically trying to, you know, steal things.
Right.
And the guy runs out, drops a bag. And so we find out that she's like, what are you talking about? Like, I had my computer. Mm-hmm. And she pulls it out of the bag that the robber dropped. And that's it. So this one I said for sure fact only because it's too boring to make up.
Yeah, I said this is probably true.
Yeah, like, it's like, okay, they wouldn't, if you could write anything, like, why would it be this boring?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't interesting at all. Like, when reality, like, a crazy thing happens in reality that's, like, beyond comprehension, it's always really crazy. Like, when it really happens, it's bonkers. Like, this is so innocuous. Why would there be any record of this, right?
I guess maybe it could be the smart thing where they, like, purposefully made it boring to try to throw people off, but yeah. Who the fuck knows? Anyway, so we both got that wrong?
Yes.
We both said fact. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're still at, you have three, I have two. Mm-hmm. All right, next up, we've got the girl next door, and we learn about Curtis, who is a playboy.
Indeed,
because
he
has hundreds of numbers.
Hundreds of women's numbers.
And we actually see Jonathan Frakes' little, like, fucking Palm Pilot or whatever at the beginning of this. Like, oh, you can be a real playboy with this and store so many numbers. Okay, great. Yeah. So this guy just moved into a house, and he's just got all sorts of women, it sounds like. And his neighbor, Florence Wheeler, comes over to visit him.
Introduces herself.
Yes. And so he instantly asks her to come over for dinner, kind of like a date thing. And he puts on his finest, gigantic blue satin tarp.
That is a silk pajama top. That's literally a part of silk pajamas.
Oh, really? Just this giant thing?
That can't be a normal shirt.
I don't know the difference between satin and silk. I should have looked up what satin was before I said
that.
Oh,
I don't know. They definitely feel very similar.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, so I was close at least.
Yeah.
It's not like I said, like, wool, right?
No, that would have been wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I was close at least.
Yeah, it's reasonable.
Which he also says a word here that I forgot was a thing people ever said, which is pronouncing the word fine with an O and making it foine.
Wait, that's something people did? I thought he just screwed up and they didn't want to do another take.
I seem to remember in movies and also some douchebags back in that time frame saying, like, oh, that girl's foine.
Oh, man.
It's rough.
I don't remember that at all.
It's not great. So anyway, Curtis and Florence get together. So
they have dinner. They're hitting it off.
Yes, and they wind up, like, dating.
Yeah, but she's an old-fashioned girl, so she's not giving it up too easily.
No. But, you know, we flash forward. It's obvious they've been together for, I don't know if it's weeks or months or something at this point. But she is sitting close to the bedroom where he
is. Well, she reveals that she had been cheated on by her fiancé.
That's right. And so she doesn't want to move too fast or anything.
Because she's very sensitive about that stuff.
Exactly. And so she overhears this very loud cavalier conversation he's having on his cell phone, pacing around the bedroom that she's right next to in the small house. And he's just clearly saying, like, oh, I can't wait to recreate that time where we fucked in the cabin or whatever. And so she just, like, runs out, and she's like, all right, I'm out of here. And he goes to try to find her, and she had always said that she lived across the street, like, just across the street from him. So he goes there, Curtis does, and there's, like, a groundskeeper there. And he's like, oh, where's Florence? And he's like, oh, she doesn't live there anymore.
No, he doesn't say that. He says, like, oh, no, a minister lives here, and he's lived here for 25 years.
That's right, and that's where Curtis sees the church that's right next to that, and he runs in, and there is a graveyard. So it turns out Florence Wheeler did live right across the street in the graveyard.
She died at age 25, 1949.
Yes. That one, I said, was fiction.
I did say that as well.
And it turns out that was fiction. Mm-hmm. So we are at right. 4U3Me. Yeah, and then we go to the wallet, which we meet Jason. He's this kid, doesn't have a lot, raised by foster parents. He's out there playing weird, like, The Room-esque football that doesn't look like how anyone's ever played football out in this little park. And he dives for it and just totally biffs it. He's, like, 20 feet away from the ball.
Yeah, he sucks.
Gets up to go grab it, and it turns out the football landed on this wallet. And they find a driver's license for this guy, Henry Neiman. And they're like, oh, the address isn't far. Let's go check this out. Turns out it's this giant gated mansion. The butler is fucking alert from the Adams family. And then he's like, okay, yes, I'll go get Mr. Arnold. Which, you know, not Mr. Neiman, as the driver's license said. So another giant tall guy shows up. And lots of, like, weird questioning. Lots of asking Jason about, like, who's your people? What's all this?
Yeah.
Jason starts getting kind of weirded out. And then he sees, like, what appears to be framed photos of himself all over the house. Mm-hmm. And understandably freaks out and tries to run out.
Right.
That's when I think the tall guy yells out that Neiman died 2 years ago. And it turns out that that was his brother in the pictures?
No, it was some distant relative.
Oh, it was some distant relative, and, like, he was the only... Jason was the only surviving heir.
Right, the sole heir to the $40 million fortune.
Yeah, which, did they... They implied that he got that, right? Like, I think Jonathan Frakes said something like, oh, and he was
living
pretty...
Yeah, that's what they... Yeah, but here's the thing. I would have believed it until they said that Mr. Neiman had, like, died 2 years earlier and, like, hadn't left his house for, like, the years before, so why would his wallet be there?
Oh, yeah.
So I said this was fake.
Okay, so you said fiction, I said fact. Mm-hmm. It turns out it was fact.
Yeah.
So I think that'll tie us up at four, right?
Right, 4-4.
Okay, 4-4, moving into the woods, our penultimate episode. This is a family going out camping. They're trying to set up the tent. Mm-hmm. Dad's a doofus, can't set up the tent.
It's going poorly.
Trying to make out with his wife while she's, like, clearly just trying to eat Cheetos. She's not into it.
Oh, yeah, but also, let me just note that, like, for the amount of time the parents are on screen, most of that time is this cheese doodle eating scene.
Yeah, they nail it, though. I think they both got Emmys.
Yeah, but the dad tries to, like, make out with the mom while she's eating cheese doodles, which, like, you know, I'm not someone that, like, thinks one food is more romantic than another, but cheese doodles, that's not something you want to, like, make out with someone while they're eating.
Right.
I mean, like, of all the food, I mean, there's a lot of foods I wouldn't want. Like, if you were eating cheese doodles, that wouldn't be a time that I would go make out with you.
Right.
If you were eating, like, something yummy, like pie, like a cherry pie or something.
All right.
Or some kind of fruit or ice cream, maybe.
There are a lot of love songs about eating pie.
Yeah.
I've heard The Rock has one.
Cherry pie. Yeah. That song's about eating pussy.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, that song's about, that's like the most blatant vagina eating song.
Oh, I don't believe that. I've seen the music video. I don't think there's anything sexual going on.
What is that, a warrant?
It's warrant,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, I wouldn't come make out with you if you were eating, like, a bloomin' onion or something.
Can I tell a quick Ben Hansen story on that note?
Yeah.
So, I don't think he'll get mad at me for telling me this one. It's pretty innocuous, but probably about 5 years ago in Minnesota, he had a girlfriend.
So Ben Hansen is our good friend.
Good friend.
Former coworker of Dan.
Video producer, Game Informer, incredibly talented, great guy. And
he's the best.
He's fantastic. And he's a very weird guy, too. And he told me once about his then-girlfriend and him were at a movie, and he put a ton of dots in his mouth, the candy dots, like filled his mouth with dots, and his girlfriend did not know that, and he went to, like, go make out with her, and he just, like, really open mouth, like all these dots were in his mouth. I don't know if he was, like, pushing them into her mouth, and she was not into it at all.
Oh, no. So
that's an extremely Ben Hansen thing to do.
That does seem very Ben Hansen-like.
Yes. So, dumbass kid Randy goes out to try to catch a worm.
Yeah.
And
catch a worm.
Yeah, and a rattlesnake shows up.
Hey, Dan, did you try to catch bugs as a kid?
Yeah, I would catch, like, lightning bugs.
Yeah, I would catch lightning bugs, but I would go in the backyard, like, after school and, like, lift up rocks and find potato bugs or those bugs that, like, kind of smell that curl up into a ball.
Oh, roly-polies.
Yeah. And worms. I would find worms. And sometimes little tiny salamanders if the rock is, like, moist underneath.
I used to do the serial killer shit where I took a magnifying glass out and, like, would find a grasshopper or whatever. And
oh, that's so cruel.
It is. I did way more of, like, burning army men and, you know, the classic little kid stuff than I did, like, grasshoppers. Mm. But it happened. But I've never killed anyone.
All right. Well, I'm sure I've stepped on a bunch of bugs in my life without even knowing.
Certainly. You had a whole pile of bees at your desk at one point.
Oh, well, those bees were already dead.
That's true. Still weird.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll admit, the one time I actually did kill, like, a ton of adorable little critters. My brother was playing baseball
when I was a little girl,
and, like, I didn't have anything to do, so I'd run around and collect caterpillars, and I kept them in this, like, big Tupperware, like, Chinese food Tupperware container, like, probably had soup in it or something. And I don't know how, like, because I never see caterpillars anymore, but I collected so fucking many caterpillars. And when I got home, I put them on the grill in the backyard, and I left them there because I'm a fucking idiot, and they all burned. And they all died from the heat because they were right in the sun.
But you put them on a grill, not an active grill, right? But metal grill.
It was like the little wooden part, like where people would rest their plates or whatever.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, but they were super dead. All those fucking butterflies. They would have been butterflies.
Yeah, that would have been beauty that
they
came into
the world.
They would
have been butterflies. They were, before they died, they were adorable caterpillars.
Just living their lives.
Yeah, I love caterpillars. Told them. I know. Remember we saw the ones in New Orleans and I kept trying to save them?
I do. You saved several caterpillars. Yeah.
They're just fucking idiots. They're walking on the sidewalk. Someone's going
to
kill them.
It's a bad place to be walking.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys.
All right, so you're a monster. So Randy finds this rattlesnake who's staring at him and angry and doing rattlesnake stuff with his tail. And
just
dumbass,
being a rattlesnake.
He's being a rattlesnake, and Randy's being dumbass Randy and pokes the snake with a stick.
What a fuck. fucking idiot. He deserves. He gets bitten, and he totally deserves it.
Instantly bit.
I was happy when he got bit.
Yeah, serves you right.
Fuck
kid.
Yeah, go you, Rattlesnake.
And then Magic Wheelchair Man shows up, who says he's a doctor, and he gives him this like special tube that will like suck the poison out. And so yeah, this guy who has no use of his hands or his legs, but managed to like silently show up in this wheelchair right after he gets bit. And so yeah, the kid sucks the blood out, and then like the medical people show up, the family shows up and finds the kid, and the kid explains that the doctor guy was there, and the medical guys are like, oh, but that doctor, yeah, he lived here, but he died 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, he had an accident on his way home from medical school, and he always wanted to help people, but mm-hmm. he died 10 years ago. So I said that was fiction.
I said it was fiction as well.
Okay, so we both missed that one.
Because John Byrd just sounds like a made-up name. That was the name
yes,
of the Dr. doctor.
Byrd. Yeah. Which I think that makes us tied at 4-4. And I think that was our last one.
Yes.
So we are tied up with a 40% success rate here. So we already kind of talked about how the reveals are just bullshit because they're very loose with fact.
Yeah, yeah. I actually tried to like look up some of these stories to see if I could find any information on the ones that they said were true. And I couldn't find anything.
And throughout all of these, there's pretty much only two endings. There's a mysterious object or person either unexplainably appearing or disappearing, mm-hmm. like the wings showing up in the plane mm-hmm. or the fireman kid or the babysitter's laptop or Florence or the wheelchair doctor. It's like, oh, but that it wasn't there. Like, you know, double takes. Like, oh, I swore I saw it.
Right.
And then the other ending that they use a couple times is surprise family member who looks identical to you.
Yeah. Or like there's always a person that you see that actually died like 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really dumb. You know, and here's the thing. Like I've spent enough time on the internet going down Wikipedia rabbit holes and reading like about all the creepiest things that mm-hmm. have ever happened in the world.
Yes.
I would have heard about like a plane that mysteriously took off and then crashed.
An unmanned plane that took off. Yeah. With a spirit father in it.
Yeah. With like and this fucking pin that this kid lost ages ago. I would, you know, I feel like I would have heard about that.
Although I kind of understand it more with shows like Unsolved Mysteries and things that were around in like the late 80s, early 90s before the internet was like mm-hmm. widely, you know, available. Mm-hmm. Because hell, if you're watching a show back then, it's like, hey, they say it's real. I guess it's real. But this show seemed to exist like in the early days of the internet, but it was still like the internet was definitely around.
Oh, I would not compare this to Unsolved Mysteries. I mean, no. Unsolved Mysteries, most of that stuff, obviously all the crime stuff, that really happened. Someone really was wronged in some way. Okay. I mean, they interview the people a lot of the times.
That's true. You've seen a lot more Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, yeah.
I used to
watch it all the time as a kid. Now it's on Hulu, so I watch it. But, like, I mean, it's either someone getting murdered, someone disappearing. And then it is interspersed with these stories about, like, oh, you know, this place is haunted or I saw a UFO.
Right.
But, like, I feel whether or not those stories are real, the people sharing them truly believe it. You could tell that.
Right. So, I mean, even if these events didn't happen, that person probably believes it happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is just pure absurdity.
Yeah, yeah. This seems like nonsense. I wonder how much of a kernel of truth there was in any of the, you know, quote, fact ones.
I wish I
ones.
Could figure it out, but it's just really hard to Google. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I have no idea how popular the show was. I mean, it looks like it ran for about 4 seasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of production going on in the show, like all the intro and everything. Just a lot of graphics.
So many props.
Yes, there's Jonathan Frakes coming out with like a taxidermied snake before the snake story.
And you know what it had too? It had that voiceover guy that I used to hear all the time. I don't know if he passed away or something.
I don't think it's because there's Don LaFontaine that died less than 10 years ago, and he's the like in a world where.
But was that the guy though?
I think this guy is a more raspy guy. It's okay, like, up next, Don.
Whoever it is, I've heard him constantly at that time, and now I never hear him anymore.
Yeah, like as soon as I heard that voice, I definitely had that thing like activate my brain, like oh, I've heard that before.
The same.
Yeah, so harmless show, I mean, full of bullshit or whatever, but it was kind of fun watching like how, like if one story was boring or whatever, you know it'd be over in like 3 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Certainly not a show I'm going to keep watching or anything
No.
But yeah, that will be it for Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction. Honey, up next,
yes,
we will be dealing with one of your favorite topics, dogs.
Oh,
we both like dogs. We
I
got a dog
him.
Sitting right here being a nice boy here.
I love mushy, happy, floppy dogs.
Yes, and hopefully these are stories that at least end happily with dogs because mm-hmm. we're going to be watching on Netflix Caesar 911, which this is Caesar Milan, and I only know of him because he was a part of a South Park episode, mm-hmm. or like he wasn't on it, but like they...
I know of him as the Dog Whisperer.
Have you ever heard of that? Yeah, that's the show that they're parodying in South Park.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I know he's really good with dogs. He used to have this like adorable, really sweet pit bull who he would use to like train all his other dogs and stuff. So
oh, yeah.
That's a little fact that I know about him that I thought was really sweet.
I remember looking him up when we first got Razor because we hired a trainer, and I was kind of looking up all the different tactics, and or you know, tactics, I don't know if that's the word for it, but it's not fucking Rainbow Six. This is raising a puppy. Like, all the little tricks and stuff to get a dog to obey you. And it seemed like the guy we hired had some of those like Cesar Millan type tips. And I saw there was some controversy about the way he's done things because he's big on like putting the two fingers and like hitting them. Like, not hitting them, but like kind of like jab is also too strong of a word. But, you know, like a little poke. Just, hey, you're being serious here. Like, oh, dogs are pack animals and you need to show that you're not submissive.
And then there are people that kind of just advocate for pure positive reinforcement, which I think is – I mean, from my experience, like, trying to train a dog, like, I trained Lucian, who used to be my dog but is now my dad's dog because they're best friends. But I would just do the positive reinforcement thing, and I taught him, like, lay and sit and all that stuff.
He's a great dog.
He's the best. He's so sweet. I love Louis.
Yeah. So we will be seeing Cesar Millan's methods from what my understanding from reading these synopsis on Netflix is that these are, like, bad cases. Like, these are dogs that are really causing trouble.
Just say it, Dan. They're bad dogs.
Bad dogs can become good dogs, and I hope that's what the show is about. I hope Cesar Millan shows up and does whatever weird dog whisperer stuff he does, and then they wind up being, you know, they get a good job working at Target or something.
Imagine he literally just goes and whispers into the dog's ear.
And the dog's like, oh, I should be doing that. Okay, that's every episode. So we will be watching season one, episode one and two on Netflix. It looks like there's only one season up on there now. I don't know how similar this is to The Dog Whisperer, but it's him and it's dogs. So yeah, if you want to watch along with us, watch season one, episode one and two of Cesar 911 on Netflix. And I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Tom Monda for the excellent theme music that you're hearing right now. If you folks at home
Thank me?
I would like to. Yeah, you're the most important. I was going to thank you last.
So you thank me last? All right. When people give speeches at award ceremonies, they usually thank the person who's great.
No. Well, I guess you probably should do the first, because if they start playing the music, then you won't have time to do that. Okay. So that'll be it. So next week is Cesar 911. The first person I'd like to thank is Bianca Monda.
A minute. I would prefer my brother go before me. I think he's more worthy of praise than I am, but I don't think I should go last. Here.
Okay, I want to thank...
So thank my brother?
I want to thank the Mondas for their participation in painting the stream. Just a great family all around. Just the whole crew. The Mondas, they're the best. So thanks for everything you guys have done. And if you folks at home want to get a hold of us, you can follow us and respond to us at PanTheStream on Twitter, or you can email us directly at PanningTheStream@gmail.com. If you listen to the podcast and you like it, if you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, that would be excellent. Thank you so much. And Bianca, I know I thanked you at the top here of the outro, but I want to thank you again. I think you're just the absolute best. Thank you so much for everything you bring to this, for being my wife, for making my life what it is, and bringing happiness into my life every single day. Just your beaming face, the hilarity, the beauty. Yes, everything. You're just radiant and the nicest, kindest, most selfless person I've ever met in my life.
I make good omelets.
You make great omelets. Thank you so much. You put cheese on it. You know I like cheese a lot. You do that thing with the zucchini pasta that is really healthy, but you put a bunch of like cheese and butter on stuff that I like a lot, and it makes it taste really good, but still kind of healthy. So thanks for that. You're great. Everyone at home, you're great. Thanks so much for listening to Painting the Stream, and we will see you next week with Cesar 911.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, folks.